Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. This is Frank McKay, but more importantly, my special guest from the world of hockey and just an announcing great, John Kenneth McDonald, better known as Jigs McDonald. How are you, Jigs?
I'm fine, Frank. Thank you for being so formal.
Yeah, if somebody said, hey, you know John Kenneth McDonald, I don't think anybody around here would know. If you say, you know Jigs, everybody knows Jigs.
And yeah, well, when the phone rings here and they ask for John, it's usually a bill collector. If they ask for Ken, it's a relative.
Oh, is that what your relatives know, yes?
Yeah. Ken? Yeah, it's always Ken. It's always been Ken. I can't explain that other than from the time I can remember acknowledging my name, it was Ken McDonald. And there's a wonderful story involved with Jigs.
Yeah.
I know you were probably going there anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, go ahead.
When I went to work for Jack Kent Cook and the Los Angeles Kings in 1967, one of the first requests was, did I have a nickname? The answer was no. I'd never used a nickname. Well, I had used a nickname as a teenage disc jockey, I guess, but no, nothing that I would use on the air. So I just kind of ignored it other than saying no.
Yeah.
We get to a day before our very first preseason game with the Kings in 1967, and Mr. Cook, or the man as we called him, is insisting that I have a nickname. And I'll quote it word for word.
Go ahead.
He said, John Kenneth McDonald is as fine a name as I've ever heard. However, it has no recall value. I'm thinking to myself, what is this man talking about, recall value? What?
Yeah.
He said, Ken McDonald just rolls off your tongue, goes right through this ear, out that ear, and now we have to have a nickname. So we manufactured. Well, we didn't really manufacture. I'd been called Jigs by, I guess, probably grade six on, just the kids in the little village I came from.
Yeah.
And when I said Jigs, he said, marvelous, we'll use it. And he said, now you're talking. Jigs McDonald. People say, excuse me, what did you say your name was? So Jigs became effective. And
so Jack Kent Cook is responsible for Jigs?
Yes, he is.
No kidding. Let me ask you something, just kind of off topic, but on Jack Kent Cook, I always heard the story, and I in today's economy, you can't imagine that this is even close to being true, but I was told that this was true, that with the Washington Redskins, Jack Kent Cook, right, the owner, lost money, right, lost money with the Redskins back then, but six games a year, right, when it was 12-game schedules, right, six games a year, he would have the elite of Washington in his box, and he would celebrate the games with them, and he would host them and everything else, and he would make real estate deals. Of course, he eventually went on to buy the Empire State Building, I believe, right, and
yeah,
so many other prized properties. But is it possible that Jack Kent Cook and other owners back then actually lost money on NFL teams?
It wouldn't shock me at all. He was a very frugal individual. I'm sure nobody was overpaid in his organization at that time with the Redskins. He did the same thing in Los Angeles, always entertained at either Lakers games or Kings games at the fabulous Forum. Never had more than $5, never had more than a $5 bill in his pocket at any given moment, Frank.
Wow.
He did amazing things with financing. Had friends in high circles. I can believe that he probably didn't make money. He told a wonderful story about not getting a Major League Baseball franchise in Toronto way back before he moved from Toronto to Los Angeles, and the reason being that he wouldn't pay the price to join the Lodge.
Oh my God!
He regretted that.
What was the Lodge?
To join what he called the Lodge.
Oh, the Lodge, Major League Baseball.
His great friend was Branch Rickey, or Mr. Rickey. He was never referred to as Branch. It was always Mr. Rickey in conversations with Jack Kent Cook. And that was a show of respect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He always insisted that we called him Jack, and with him calling Mr. Rickey, Mr. Rickey, he was always Mr. Cook. Behind his back, he was the man.
Yeah.
The man this or the man that.
Wow.
To his face. In the office, one-on-one, always Mr. Cook.
Well, the man we're speaking to is has had quite a career and just a wonderful career. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, the Foster Hewitt Award, Memorial Award from the Hockey Hall of Fame, I believe, and this is Mr. Jiggs McDonald, who was the announcer for the Islanders. And folks on Long Island and around the hockey world remember him for being a big part of that that crew and the great Islander teams of the 80s. This is Frank McKay, but again, more importantly, Jiggs McDonald is my very special guest. Jiggs, looking back on all of it, and just recently, the Islanders didn't make it to pass the first round, and we didn't get that big Ranger-Islander series that everyone was hoping would close out the island, or well, the Islander fans certainly weren't hoping that it would close out the Coliseum. But having said that, how do you think they're going to do in Brooklyn?
You know, I think they'll have to create a new fan base, much like they did when they first arrived on Long Island, Frank. They're moving closer to Ranger territory, and I don't have to tell you what that's like. If they're competitive, as they were this year, granted, they're far more competitive the first part of the season than the tail end of it, and injuries always a part of the game, bit them big time when you look back at the second last game of the regular season. And then the players that went down during that series with Washington. But I think if they can add a depth player or two up front, and probably will have to replace Vasnovsky on the back end, I think they'll be a very competitive team. And with that, they should have great success in Brooklyn. The arena maybe isn't as conducive to hockey as some of the other NHL facilities, but it is a beautiful, beautiful facility, and I think the fans will—they'll endorse it. They'll begin to accept it as long as the team is competitive and does its thing.
There was a story somebody told me recently where you almost paired with Al Michaels. Now, am I misremembering this, or is this?
No, you're not. No.
Where was it? Had to do with Atlanta Flames?
No, that was Los Angeles. And again, that was Jack Kent Cook. Al had been hired. I don't know that Mr. Cook hired him. I think Don Fraser or somebody else in the office dealing with basketball had hired Al to join the hockey team or to join and become my analyst. All of a sudden, Mr. Cook decides that he would be better served putting Al on basketball with Chick Hearn and teaming me with Ed Fitkin. Now, Ed had come from Hockey Night in Canada, had a tremendous broadcasting career background to deal from, plus his work with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and a recognition factor already established perhaps in the Los Angeles market. So Al went to work with Chick, who never really wanted to have an analyst or anybody working with him. In fact, Al would reach, they only used the one mic on stand-ups, Frank, and Al would reach for it and Chick would pull it away from him. But,
wow.
But that's where we first became associated. And then later, of course, we both worked the Olympics in Calgary in 1988 and had a couple of good laughs about our days working for the man, as we called him.
So when they thought about doing this, this is early enough where Al Michaels wasn't yet Al Michaels.
Correct.
And Jiggs McDonald wasn't yet Jiggs McDonald. You were just getting there, right? You're just being branded. A lot of talent in those two individuals, by the way. But Al Michaels, what was it in Michaels that you saw early on that could have led you to believe that he'd become what he became?
Smooth, very smooth. Had a great knowledge, a great presentation on the air, just easy to listen to, easy to be around, easy to work with, I found, and knowledgeable. Not knowledgeable enough for Jack Kent Cook. The other side of the story is that he was replaced by a gentleman who just passed away recently by the name of Hot Rod Hundley. Al was working, obviously, for the Lakers and was also the traveling secretary. Now, they're at LAX. They're at the airport. The Lakers are getting ready for a road trip. Al had the plane tickets. He had the meal money in his pockets or in his hand ready when he got word that Mr. Cook wanted to see him at the office. Well, at that time, the offices were in Beverly Hills. They hadn't moved into the Forum yet. for him to go to Beverly Hills, get back in time for the flight, wasn't going to happen. He said, I can't do it. I can't go. You've got to go. You must be in Beverly Hills immediately to see Mr. Cook and just give the money to Hot Rod. Well, why is Rod Hundley coming? Just give the money to Rod. Anyway, with that, he went to Beverly Hills and was dismissed from his job, and Rod took over the booth with Chick Hearn.
Wow. So that's history. And you don't hear that. You don't hear much about this, and unless you ask, of course, because this isn't the type of thing that's so well known. So it's, to me, it's important to document these type of things. It's just an incredible business, and it's an incredible look behind with a man who has seen it all in his many years. And again, John Kenneth McDonald later became Jigs McDonald, named or at least coined by Jack Ken Cook, the great Jack Ken Cook, and the man, as they refer to him. Jigs McDonald is my very special guest. This is Frank McKay. Now, Jigs, if you don't mind, can we do a little bit of your history? Where were you born? Where were you raised?
Okay, well, I was born in Ontario, in Canada, probably about 10 miles from where I grew up. The village I came from was spelled A-Y-R and pronounced Air. Just perfect for a broadcaster to call hometown, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, from Air. From Air,
Air Ontario. Went to school through grade school in Air, a village at that time of about 800, 900 people. High school in Galt, now Cambridge, Ontario, and it was there, I guess, that the love of broadcasting, the desire to be part of the broadcasting industry was really fostered and moved up. Always had a love of sports, tried to play as best I could, and found that I couldn't skate backwards, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not going to be a major league ball player, not going to be in the National Hockey League player if you can't make one foot go one way.
Yeah.
Or both feet go the same way, I should say. So the broadcast industry really, really appealed. And it was probably, I guess, maybe my second year in the radio business in a small Ontario town by the name of Lindsay, Ontario, that I got an opportunity to do some hockey play-by-play. Loved it. A little later on, had done junior hockey, senior hockey, never anything at the pro level, had done some baseball. Then I had an opportunity to work at a radio station that had that wonderful seven-second format, nothing between records, as a just hockey, other than you couldn't get a whole lot in 7 seconds. But I found that that wasn't going to be my niche, and I was able to continue and move back to a station that afforded me the opportunity to do play-by-play. We had a community radio station, Frank. If there was anything going on in town, we were there. We were covering it. The owner and the manager and the sales department agreed that hockey, baseball, high school football, whatever it was community oriented enough or major factor in the fiber of the community that we would carry it and they'd be able to sell it and we'd put it on the air, and I was the guy who did it.
Jigs McDonald is the voice you're listening to, beautiful voice that you're listening to, and Islander fans heard it for, I believe, 3 Stanley Cups, right? You came after the first one?
Yes.
And so the first one was one of the Alberts, I believe, right?
That was Steve at the time.
And then you replaced him, and then you were blessed by timing, that's for sure.
I'll say.
Yeah, and you had a lot of you had an up close view of a lot of great hockey. Now I've got to disclose that I am a lifelong Ranger fan, so that was a torturous time for for me. But you and Ed Westfall made Islander fans very happy with your broadcasting skills as they went on to win 3 additional Stanley Cups. When you came here, did you kind of pinch yourself thinking, you know what, this has a chance to be something really special here? Or were you thinking, my God, they just won a Stanley Cup. If they don't win this year, they're going to think I'm the Jinx, and never mind Jigs, you know? Did any of that cross your mind?
It did cross my mind immediately, yes. Winning one, in fact, when I first teamed up, actually when I met Bill Torrey, well, I'd known Bill for several years, But on my way to the June meetings in Montreal, and knowing that I wasn't going to Calgary, I had been told straight out that they had no interest in investing a dime and taking a broadcaster out there to go out, get myself a job, and they would probably use me. But that's a whole other story. On my way through New York, at the Eastern Airlines conference room, or I forget what they called their special room for first class,
yeah,
that kind of thing, I met John Pickett, and we talked about the job, what the job would mean, what had happened in Atlanta, why the Flames were leaving, this kind of thing. I get to Montreal, and I'm checking into the hotel, and Mr. Torrey walks behind me and says, "Understand you had a good meeting." "Oh, hi, Bill." "Yeah, it did." He said, "We'll get to talk before the week is out." We didn't get to talk until Saturday morning during the actual draft itself, the entry draft. And he came looking for me. We got ourselves over into a corner, and he is telling me that if I come with him, they're going to win it for a long time. I'm going to have a great ride. And I just looked at him. I knew him well enough to say, "Bill, are you kidding me? You don't think if that offside goal is disallowed, you have to go back to Philadelphia for Game 7? Do you think you can win Game 7 in Philadelphia, really?" And the coach of the Philadelphia Flyers at the time was my former across-the-street neighbor in Atlanta, the late Pat Quinn. And I have to honestly say, I was cheering for Pat from the Philadelphia Flyers.
Sure, yeah.
Frank.
Yeah, you talk about strange bedfellows. I mean,
indeed. But Bill said, "No." He said, "You won't believe the depth and the quality that we have on this team. Just come on along for the ride. You'll have a good time."
And he wasn't.
So I did, and I had a good time. The other interesting, to me anyway, interesting way the job came about is that Steve Albert had to make a decision. Was he going to continue to do Islander games, or was he going to continue to do Mets games? Because he couldn't do both, one or the other. And here we are in 2014, well, actually, I guess since 2005, that Howie Rose has been doing Mets baseball, and I've been filling in for his conflicts and games that he chooses to miss.
What a strange world. And, I mean, you're talking about the chaos theory in motion. If one thing doesn't happen and this decision isn't made. But, again, I want to remind everyone that Jigs McDonald is our very special guest. This is Frank McKay. And I want to talk more and more about that team, and I talk as if it's only one team. Obviously, there were some moving parts, but for the most part, they were able to keep it together. Again, Jigs McDonald here, former Islander announcer, and you gotta look back and say, you know, again, you're part of something very special here. What was the first impression of the second, or the year after the Cup, was the first impression that you got of the team? Did they look like they had this, you know, eye of the tiger type thing, and they were going to repeat, or they look a little confused or complacent?
No, the eye of the tiger is a good description. They were all business. They had some good times. They partied hardy. They had a schedule. They had a regimen, I guess I should say, in how they approached each segment of the season. As of March 1st, for instance, there were no more team appearances or individual appearances or endorsements or things away from hockey. It was get yourself ready for the games in April and May. Of course, we didn't go into June at that time. The other factor would be the training staff, headed by Ron Wasky, had a program that he measured not only body fat, but conditioning at training camp. He checked again, usually either just before or just after Christmas, going into the new year, and then the second week of March, he would put them through that test again. If there hadn't been progress, and he had a level that every player had to be at, and if they weren't there, then they were on the bike, or they were doing extra wind sprints, back stops and starts, length of the ice, whatever, to be in the best possible condition that they could be when the regular season ended. So there was an altogether different approach than I had seen elsewhere. They were a dedicated bunch. I was never aware of any problems in the dressing room if one player didn't like another or there was conflict. or anybody complaining about their ice time or lack thereof. I'm sure there were things like that, but everybody knew their role, accepted their role, because it could lead to the Stanley Cup when it was all said and done. So they just poured themselves into it. The thing that really caught my eye, so many times they seem to let the opposition set the standard of the game. If you wanted to get into a speed game, an all-out skating game, they would beat you at that. If you wanted to get into a grind it out, if you wanted to get into a slugfest, no matter what style of game you wanted to play, they had the depth or the players to beat you at it.
It pains me to say this, but that was a great, great team. And we're coming right up on a break. And Jiggs McDonald will be with us right after the break. This is Frank McKay. Jiggs, right before we go, do you have a website or some social media site that people can go to and kind of follow what you're doing?
No, really. I am on Facebook, but I don't really do a whole lot on there. My youngest daughter established a Twitter account for me that I've never used. I guess I'm just an old fogey, Frank.
Good for you. You're old school. They call that old school. And that's a respectful term. That's not an old term. Let me remind everyone, we're going into the break. Jiggs McDonald will be with us right after this. This is Frank McKay. We'll be back. I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. My very special guest today is a wonderful announcer, a man with a golden voice, that's for sure, and Islander fans and people from Long Island clearly will recognize it as soon as he starts talking. He announced three Stanley Cup winning teams in a row, came right after that first one and continued on, and he didn't jinx them, so you didn't get the you didn't get the raspberries from the fans on that. And you know how superstitious sports fans can be. Jiggs McDonald, welcome back.
Frank, my pleasure. Good to be with you.
All kidding aside, and I'm not particularly superstitious, but fans are. Did you get any hassle at all? Did you get any nutty fans saying, "Jiggs, you better not cost us the repeat"? Did you get any of that?
No, I didn't. I don't recall any of that at all. I knew that it was a different audience than I'd probably worked for in the past, meaning that Los Angeles did have pro hockey, but the majority of the hockey fans out there hadn't been exposed to the National Hockey League as such. Atlanta was virgin territory, if you will, as far as hockey knowledge was concerned. Granted, there were transplants from the north and the Michigan area and some Canadians, but I was teaching the game at both the first stops. With New York, I knew that the audience I couldn't talk down to, and I didn't want to talk up to. It was just nuts and bolts. Go with it.
Yeah. Now, your first impression, I guess, of the Islander-Ranger rivalry, I can't imagine you could see it the way it really is from afar. You couldn't see it from Atlanta or L.A., I guess, might have been a little too early for it, but you couldn't see it from Atlanta. I imagine you couldn't. What was your first impression of the Ranger-Islander rivalry? Was it what we would think?
Yes, exactly. I was just dumbfounded. I was my eyes had to be the size of silver dollars. The first game at the Coliseum, the first game at Madison Square Garden, I just could not believe the rivalry. Couldn't believe the number of people in the stands at the Coliseum with the Ranger jerseys. There were even some who switched back and forth. But if the Rangers got the lead, it was primarily a Rangers crowd. If the Islanders got the lead, it swung the other way. On the ice, the battles, the individual battles, always... I would say probably 90% of the time, good sportsmanship between the two teams. There were a couple of incidents, ugly incidents from time to time, but just when the schedule came out, you looked to see what the dates would be, circle them, because that just said to me, great, great hockey, great rivalry. Both buildings will be going. It was... They talk about that Calgary-Edmonton rivalry or the Montreal-Toronto rivalry. Nothing compares. Not in L.A., Anaheim or LA, San Jose rivalry, nothing compares to an Islander Ranger game.
The treatment of Potvin, actually, before I ask you that, let me remind people that just may be tuning in or just turning on their radio that this is Frank McKay, but more importantly, Jigs McDonald, the voice of the island, former voice of the Islanders, and he announced through three Stanley Cups and much more, I think another additional 12 years after that, Jigs?
Yes, it would be with the Islanders, and then some freelance work and finishing up with the Panthers, then this current situation that we've had with Madison Square Garden Network and filling in for Howie Rose.
Yeah, well, it's been a wonderful, wonderful career, and it's still going nicely. And you have, again, like I said, you've had a front row seat, so to speak, to a lot of what happened. What about the treatment of Potvin by the Ranger fans and the passionate hatred for Dennis Potvin? The Potvin sucks, and all the whistling and everything else that comes along with that, and the injury that led to that. What can you shed light on this?
Well, you would think that it would have just kind of gone away by now. It's ancient history in that respect. But Dennis was such a marked man, if you will, who was in the news on a couple of different occasions. And the fans just took great delight. And Denny, on the other hand, Frank, I don't know if you've ever been around Dennis or have asked him.
No, I haven't.
Years. Well, Dennis will tell you, no, they're not saying Potvin sucks. They're saying Potvin's cups. Potvin's cups. Can't jinx. What's wrong with your hearing, he'll say. And he'll hold up his hand, and he won't have the four Stanley Cup rings on, but he'll just hold up the four fingers. They're saying Potvin's cups. Come on.
Well, I think they usually say this in baseball, that boos on the road equal cheers at home. And
yes.
So, I mean, he should be very, I can't imagine he loses much sleep. What a career he's had. And again, I can never get over Ranger fans, and I love them. I'm a Ranger fan, but the character and the color that comes out of the blue seats and just Ranger fans in general, there was a, of course, Nick Fatio, who I'm sure you called many games with him. Still to this day, every once in a while, if there was a hard check on a Ranger, you every once in a while you could hear chants of Nicky. There's a guy who, I've had him on my TV show, Nick Fatio, and he's a character and he's a tough guy, wonderful guy. But the fan following that he has, and just because of his toughness and because of his fighting, it was just the Ranger fans are very, very colorful. I mean,
creative. And it's not just pointing the finger at Denny for what happened. It's a treat for any hockey fan from anywhere in the country who may be listening. You owe it to yourself to get to a game at Madison Square Garden. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. A Ranger home game is an experience that every hockey fan should get to enjoy.
And I would say, if you could, sit in the blue seats, because it is a different experience. It is an unbelievable experience. And when you were with the Flames and you were announcing for the Flames, did you notice it as much? Did you notice the Ranger fan as much as you did when you were here with the Islanders? It's obviously more polarizing.
I noticed them, but not to the degree at all that I experienced with Ranger fans. I could simply go in and out of the Garden as an Atlanta Flames broadcaster without any problem up to the press box. It would be the second game, I think, that we did. Eddie and I are in the press room prior to the game, and he said, I think we should go now. And I looked at my watch, and I said, pretty early. He said, we should go up now. So we head for the elevator, and up we go. And because at that time, you walked around the end of the back row of the blue seats, and there were two gentlemen sitting there. I thought they were ushers. And I overhear them. The one guy said to the other, well, here's Eddie now. Why don't we ask Eddie? He'll know. And I figure it's a hockey question coming up. And the guy said, Ed. Eddie stops, leans over, and with that, the guy tried to drop him. He just came back and coiled that fist and took a swing at Eddie. Well, Eddie was
Oh my God.
Over the railing after him in a hurry.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, good Lord, what have I gotten myself into here now? But I understood fully why he wanted to get to the booth early to avoid that kind of thing. And from then on, we always had a security guy go with us up to the booth. In fact, there was the Islanders had a pretty big boy who did some work in the dressing room. And when our broadcast, when we were finished that night, he was there at the door, and he was with us to get out of the building. And from then on, as I said, we always had a security guy back and forth with us to the booth. I got myself in a little problem. You may recall Sports Channel America, Frank, and the incident with Mario Lemieux and the slash across the hand, and Adam Graves isn't that kind of a player, but the late Roger Neilson was behind the bench, and I was familiar with Roger's tendencies, things that he would do in an effort to win any given game, and I just spoke my mind. I said my piece. And from then on, I was pretty much not, persona non grata myself in going into Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Those fans were all over me.
Yeah, see, that's, again, colorful fans. I love them. I'm one myself. I'm a Ranger fan. But when you start taking swings at the Islander announcers, I mean, that's when you gotta check your life and you gotta see what.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay. Yeah. So Eddie was on the ice when JP scored that overtime goal.
Right.
But that was a long time back. I mean, we were dealing with the 80s at this point, late 80s, mid 80s. And, it was time to put it aside, I thought.
Jigs McDonald is our very special guest. It's Frank McKay, and Jigs McDonald is the former voice of the Islanders and occasionally a voice of the Islanders, but three Stanley Cups, just an amazing view to history and an amazing career in his own right. And you know, when you look back and you realize that that Brian Trottier ended up working for the Rangers. I mean, that was the most shocking thing. That
or did Don Maloney ended up working for the Islanders? The other side of that coin, Frank.
Yeah, I mean, how do things like that happen? Well, how do you expect things like that to happen? Trottier, what's your first impression of Trottier when you got to know him?
Oh, just a gem of an individual, Brian. Brian is as down to earth, as grounded as anybody that you have ever met. Brian comes from a small town in Western Canada, plays the guitar, sings. To this day, when the NHL, I guess you can't really call them old-timers, but the former pros tour, whether it's in Eastern Canada, Western Canada, Brian always has the guitar with him. And in the socials that follow these events or these fundraising games, he's always picking and singing and is the life of the party. Just a gem, an absolute gem of an individual.
Let me ask you the same thing about Mike Bossy. And let me, before you answer that, do you think the, I'll go into that in a little bit. I was going to ask you about the Edmonton Oilers coming right after the Islander dynasty. But with that in mind, Mike Bossy.
Bossy's a little different. Mike is a little more self-centered, a little more, much quieter. There's a side of Mike that once you get to know Mike, he's so outgoing and funny, has a great, great sense of humor. I think that's where the two of them really clicked, he and Brian. But from the business standpoint, Mike is all business. He is a hardworking individual and has been working for the Islanders in the marketing department for some time now and just has a great insight into the game. But away from, I shouldn't say away from the arena, but game days, he was focused. He had his game face on early. He was and still is a very, very determined individual.
How about Billy Smith?
Smitty, now, you see, I go back to Los Angeles with Billy Smith and with Butch Goring, for that matter. Smitty played for the Kings the last year that I was there before the expansion and the move to Atlanta. Billy Smith, again, game face. If it was his game, if he was playing that night, you didn't approach Billy or talk to him at all that day. He was business from dawn till the game was well over. I had a kind of a nodding thing with Billy. I could give him that look like, is it you? And I'd get the nod, yeah, it's me. Or even some nights when he had that game face on and it wasn't him, he would let you know that he wasn't going, but he was ready in case. He was away from the game, just a funny man as well. But around the rink, practice, or even from training camp through, he was all business.
Jiggs McDonald, once again, is our very special guest, I should say, and the voice of the Islanders for many, many years. And this is Frank McKay. And Jiggs watched three of the Stanley, called three of the Stanley Cups that the Islanders won out of the four in a row. And Jiggs, let me ask you this, and keep in mind, I recently asked Bobby Bourne this, and I really appreciated his honesty. I said, with the four Stanley Cups you won, as Edmonton was going for this, were you cheering against them because the thought that, you know, that it could tarnish, and again, nothing tarnishes four Stanley Cups, right? But it could overshadow or somehow take away from what the Islanders created. And you know what he said? He said, yes, he was cheering against the Oilers, you know, that he wanted, you know, he didn't want it to take away from that. And I appreciated that because most people say, oh, no, you know what we did, and, you know, give a more politically correct answer or whatever. But he was very candid about it. Do you from coming where you were and watching the team, was the team conscious and the players on the Islanders at that point, were they like openly rooting against the Oilers not to match their record and then go beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. They take great pride in the number 19. Not just Brian Trottier's number, but 19 consecutive playoff series wins. That's something that I don't think in this day and age, in the era of the cap, will be matched. It would take probably at least five, maybe eight, as many as eight players to take a hometown haircut, if you will, to keep a team alive. There are great stories about how much the budget was or what the payroll was for the Islanders throughout those years that they were winning the four Stanley Cups, Frank. But in this day and age, and the, I guess, agents' demands, players' demands, free agency, that kind of thing, I don't think you can keep a team together long enough to win four consecutive and go to the final in that fifth year the way the Islanders did back then.
You're absolutely right. That 19 is a magic number. 19 consecutive playoff series wins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable number.
And it could have just as easily ended very early. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins probably had the right to knock off the New York Islanders on their bid for the third Stanley Cup, put two in the bank and bow to the Penguins when that series, of course, was a best of five. But you win the first two at home, you go to Pittsburgh, lose game three in overtime, and then lose four by a big score, come back home, and you're down by two in the third period. Are fortunate to get it tied up and really fortunate not to have lost it in overtime. That was just an amazing, amazing hockey game. I think it was Stan Bullard that had the opportunity. It appeared to be a wide open net. Billy Smith gets his skate on it, and boom, the play. A couple minutes later, the other direction, and John Tinelli did what John Tinelli was always famous for doing, that big overtime goal, and they win it. But they could have just as easily have lost that series and been finished with two Stanley Cups.
Out of people that we haven't mentioned yet from the Great Islander dynasty, the four Stanley Cup winners, is there a leader that's never recognized as a leader outside of the organization? Was there somebody that was there, and he was, and you know, people know Gillies and they understand that, and they understand the, you know, the leadership of Trottier and Potvin, of course, but is there an unsung leader in that clubhouse that people just don't talk about?
I don't know that you could put him in the category of leader, but there was one player in particular well, two probably, that they wouldn't have been able to win without. And one would be Butch Goring, and what he brought to that dressing room and what he said to the guys when he arrived, that they didn't recognize just how good they were and how they were perceived by the rest of the teams in the National Hockey League. And he was the catalyst. Granted, he just gave them that second centerman. It wasn't so much the shorthanded goals, but he took a lot of the pressure off Brian, winning huge faceoffs, gave them that presence on a second line. The other individual would be Stefan Persson. I don't know that there is a better defenseman, all-round defenseman, than Stefan through the four Stanley Cups. You can put Kenny Morrow in there. Again, Kenny, so quiet, not in the leadership category, but the respect that they had for him, what he brought to that team, and the ability just to not only score a big goal for them at the most opportune time, but his ability as a defenseman to move the puck, tie up people, not let them get out of the corner. He brought something. But again, the leadership would all be, I think, on the shoulders of Denny and on Brian. But it was all orchestrated by Al. The two guys, Trotsky and Bossy, that we've talked about, Frank, tell a great story. Do you have a minute for...
Sure. We got about a minute. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. Al called Brian into his office one day, and he said, Trots, what's wrong with Boss? What do you mean, Coach, what's wrong with Boss? Oh, he said, you got to get him going. Geez, Al, we won the game 4-2 last night. He had two goals and an assist. Oh, he said, he's just not going. Brian, you got to get him going. Okay. And the way it goes, next player in, Al wants to see Boss. Boss, what's wrong with Brian? Not playing very well. What do you mean? We won 4-2, whatever it was. Brian had the other goal and an assist. No, he said he's just not going. He played them. He really played them. He had Denny Potvin. He would spin him around like a top. Denny didn't know exactly what was up. In the room, the whipping boy was Denny Potvin. And the rest of the guys are thinking to themselves, well, if he can treat Dennis like this, what's he think about me? What's he going to do to me? Al was the master.
Unbelievable. And listen, we need a part two if you'll be gracious enough to give it to us. We're out of time. Jigs McDonald, thank you very much for being here. What a career you've had. What a voice you have. Just
thank you.
Just an amazing career, an amazing, talented announcer. Jigs McDonald, thanks again.
My pleasure, Frank.
This is Frank McKay, thanking all of you for tuning in. Jigs McDonald has been my very special guest, and our subject today has been Islander hockey and NHL and a little broadcasting. But Jigs McDonald, the wonderful voice of the New York Islanders, and we will see you next time on Breaking It Down.